Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on our website, on our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge.
Good morning. All right, so about middle of the week, my voice started to leave me. So I'm going to try to make it through this. That's my hope, right? So I've got my water. It's got some lemon in it. I think I feel good. But if any voice cracks, you guys just act like it didn't happen, okay? Deal? Okay. I got to rein it back a little bit, too. I got to be a little more calm, a little more quiet. So I'm going to try that today without putting you to sleep as well. But all right, well, throughout the month of October, we've been highlighting sort of different things that happen in the life of our church that are reflected in our church budget. And so throughout October, we're sort of highlighting those things and putting those things before you just to give you an awareness of who our church is, what our church does. And so this week, we're highlighting Sunday morning. And as I think about really the church and the church gathering, lots of things have changed since the church was established back in the first century. But at the same time, a lot of things haven't changed, and the core tenets of what church is are still the same. And so we come together at a specific time, at a specific place, for a specific purpose. And those purposes were one, to lift up the glory of God in song together, to hear the gospel preached, to identify needs among the people, and then to be sent out back to where we came from, being filled with the Spirit in hopes that whatever we heard and whatever happened and whatever we experienced would empower us to live Spirit-filled lives at our homes, at our jobs, wherever we go. And that's been true about the church since the church started, and that's true about this place. And I think sometimes we tend to undervalue this meeting, this gathering together. But it really is truly powerful if you think about it. I mean, I remember I stand during worship. I usually stand right here back in the middle behind this little wall right here. And I stand back there because I can hear less of the people on stage and more of the people probably actually just sitting right here. So I can hear your voices singing. And there's something really powerful about that. There's something really powerful when I unite my voice with a bunch of other people communicating truth about God and who He is, in hopes that it changes me, in hopes that it changes the way I see the world, in hopes that it changes the way I see people around me. That's our hope. And then to hear the gospel preached. And so all around this campus, I mean, people of different ages, our children, our students are doing that. They are declaring who God is through song. They are hearing the gospel preached. And hopefully we are being sent out. We are hearing about needs that need to happen and trying to meet those needs as best we can. And then being sent out. We go back to our workplaces. We go back to our schools. We go back to a world which is trying to pull us in so many different directions. And so today is a very, very special day. This is a very, very special time. And I think sometimes we just undervalue that a little bit. But this is an incredible time. And in your little sheet there, you'll see all the things that happen on our campus on Sunday morning, from classes to this service to children's services to all those things. And so we would ask that if you consider yourself family, if you consider this to be your church home, and maybe you've never given before, we'd ask you that you would give in some way, shape, or form, and that it would really just be a part of what is happening here at Stonebridge. It's a special place. All right, baggage. It's baggage time, right? So we're entering into I have mixed feelings about Halloween, right? Halloween's an odd time. First, I have very nostalgic feelings about Halloween because Halloween, I think, takes us back to this time that I think that I experienced, and it's becoming sort of less and less that really like that neighbors all know each other, right? There's something nostalgic about that thought. That we're sort of moving away from a little bit, that maybe we don't know our neighbors as much. But Halloween, we sort of just kind of let that go, right? We flood the streets of our neighborhoods, and we go door to door, right? And it's not weird. It's just like this natural thing that happens, and we're meeting people. And it's just weird, kind of nostalgic time, and it makes me feel good. It's actually a really good opportunity for us as believers to be in our neighborhoods and to be a part of our communities and to shed light in that space, that really, really important space. Really cool time for us. I also have just weird feelings about Halloween because it's that time of year where like people pay other people to go into scary places to have people scare them. Like, that's a weird thing for me, man. It just is. It's odd. It's an odd thing. And I think this is true for younger people. Like, younger people love, I mean, some older people too, love horror movies. And so, like, there's always, like, some crazy horror movie that comes out around this time, and everyone's going to see it. They're paying money to be terrified. Like, I don't understand that at all. I'm not a fan of horror movies. I have friends whose, like, top three favorite movies, three of them are horror movies. Out of their top five favorite movies, it's like, you're a psychopath, right? If that's you, you're crazy. You're a crazy person. And so, but Halloween, it sort of uncovers and kind of playfully talks about our fears. And so, in your message, we have an emotion that keeps us up at night, and that's fear. And so, all of us carry the bag of fear in some way, shape, or form. We carry the bag of anxiety. We carry the bag of worry. We can't ever really put that one down. And in different seasons of life, we'll have different things happen to us in which that feeling, that emotion is sparked in such a way that it becomes the bag that literally prevents us from sleeping. Anyone been there? Yeah. I mean, I think most of us have been in situations that we're struggling with so much that we literally cannot sleep. And this is fear and anxiety for us. And actually, studies would show that the number of people who are experiencing this kind of emotion, and it's actually interfering with their life, the number is skyrocketing, right? Particularly around adolescents, young people, college age, young adults. Anxiety is a real thing that is causing real problems. In fact, I want to make sure I get these numbers right. There was a study done at 139 colleges. This is 3 or 4 years ago. And it submitted data that suggested that 50% of all college students at some point during their college career have an anxiety episode that would lead them to actually seek professional help. 50%. And it's not just college kids. It's our total population at large, too. This would say that 13% of all people would be diagnosed with social anxiety order. 9% of the general population would struggle with general anxiety disorder, just meaning anxiety that literally prevents them from living their life in a normal way. And I can tell you, as a parent, when I was a young person, I was never scared of anything, like nothing besides clowns. Like, this also talks about specific phobias. So 18% of us have specific phobias. Like, okay, I have one of those. It's clowns. And my kids know that. It's the worst thing ever. But when I had kids, it's like, as a young person, I reflect back. I wasn't really afraid of anything. Like, there was nothing that gave me anxiety. Like, I literally wasn't afraid of anything. I had kids, and I'm afraid of everything now. I'm afraid of everything. Things that I would never dream about worrying about, I worry about now. Things that I thought I'd be fearful of, I'm fearful about now. And so even as adults, we can carry these things, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities for us to be fearful. And the thing is, like, you Google search fear and anxiety, the world is going to tell you, you're going to find 1,000 articles on how to deal with worry, how to deal with anxiety. You're going to find those things. And fortunately, the Bible is going to speak a lot about this as well. In fact, one of the best books of the Bible to read if you're struggling with worry, you're struggling with anxiety, is the book of Psalms. Psalms is one of the books that really just gets real about an individual's emotions and communicates how to deal with those and how to deal with those in a healthy way. And so we're gonna dig into several Psalms here and uncover some of what David writes and some of what other psalmists write that hopefully give us a sort of blueprint and a framework for some truths about fear, and then how we might go about dealing with it and wrestling with that and dealing with anxiety and those kind of things. And so the first place we're gonna read is in Psalm 118. So if you have your Bibles, you can flip over there, and if not, if you get your phone or screen, you'll have it. But here's what it says. All nations surrounded me. In the name of the Lord, I will surely cut them off. They surround me. Yes, they surround me. In the name of the Lord, I will surely cut them off. They surround me like bees. They were extinguished as a fire of thorns. In the name of the Lord, I will surely cut them off. You pushed me violently so that I was falling, but the Lord helped me. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. Now, as we first read this, this isn't a Psalm of David, but it certainly reflects much of the language that we see in the Psalms of David. But as we read this, I think the first thing that stands out is this seems like an exaggeration, right? like all nations surrounding him. First of all, that's physically impossible, right? Geographically, it's impossible. This is clearly hyperbole. This is clearly feelings that he's having inside. Feelings inside that it feels like all of the nations are literally surrounding me, right? And their plans for me are evil. And he goes a step further. He says that it feels like someone is about to push me off a cliff or desires to push me off a cliff. And so we see these sort of hyperbole, exaggerated thoughts from this individual that we're not really given any indication that they're real or accurate, but this is clearly a reflection of how this individual is feeling. And so as I read that, I'm like, yeah, sometimes I feel that way. That when we're anxious and when we're filled with worry, it feels like there is nowhere to go, that everything seems stacked against us and nothing in life is going well. Now again, David's a guy who actually had some cause in his life for real worry and real anxiety, right? One of his best friends is killed in battle. Many of his children perish. One of his sons, in fact, leads an insurrection against him that forces him out of his home. So David was a guy who actually experienced some really, really tragic life stuff that would literally keep him awake at night. But we also read things like this, and we see that there is also this kind of this false, not a false reality, but it seems like the most real reality, that this seems real. And one of the first points for us in your outline is this: fear takes over when our present circumstances seem more real than the promises of God. Look, and there, like, you'll be there. You'll be at this point in time. There'll be times when the things that are going on in our lives seem far more real than anything God has ever communicated to us. Even if we've experienced God's movement in the past, there'll be times when it's like, this situation feels more real than anything God has ever told me. Seems more heavy than anything that I've ever really experienced. And in that moment, sometimes fear sort of, it becomes the most real thing that's in our lives. So I'm not a fan of horror movies, but I do like psychological thrillers, all right? So there's a big distinction between the two, right? And there's this movie called Shutter Island that I really, really enjoy. And the main premise of the movie is really, really fascinating. So the main character is kind of stuck in this mental place that he cannot get out of. And it's come out of this place of tragedy. I'll try not to spoil it. I'll try to save it as much as I can. But he comes to this place where he's kind of stuck in this really, really bad place. And he comes to this place because of this painful, really, really painful, tragic thing that happens in his life. And so he's stuck in this false reality. And so the people who love him and care for him are trying to get him out of it. They're trying to do whatever they can to get him out of it, because they know that if they can't get him out of it, it's like he cannot be free. He cannot be free. He's a danger to himself, and he's a danger to other people. And so if he can't get out of this, he cannot be free. And I won't tell you the ending. But it's a really, really good picture for us, because it paints us the picture that sometimes our fears become these things that feel so real. They feel so real. And the problem is, if we stay in those, if we actually don't remember God's promises, if we actually don't reflect back on what is the realest thing, then we come to this place where we are stuck and we don't know how to get out of it. And the truth is, we can never be free if we stay stuck in that place. Because there are going to be times where we experience real pain, where we have things that really do require fear and spark anxiety in us. There'll be times when our jobs just, they aren't going well. And they aren't going well in such a way that we don't really know what our future holds. There will be time when we are dealing with our kids and we're fearful about their futures. We're afraid that maybe they aren't at the same place as other kids. Or we're afraid that maybe they're hanging out with kids that are not good for them. Or just that the world itself is not going to be a place where they can thrive, or it's going to be that it's dangerous. We'll have those kind of fears. We'll have fears about money. We'll have fears that maybe we're not at the place that we need to be financially. Maybe we won't ever get there. Maybe we have debt that's like literally feels like it's crushing us, that it literally keeps us awake at night. Or maybe we're sick. I mean, like, life is going to present us things. It's going to reveal to us our vulnerabilities. Life's really, really good at revealing to you what you're, how you're vulnerable and how the things that you've built are vulnerable. So it's a wonder that we all aren't filled with worry and anxiety. But for you and I as the believer, fear takes over for us when we have forgotten the promises of God. And so we see David do this. We see David constantly, even in this last psalm, we see him say that the Lord is my strength and my song and my salvation. And so we see this picture that David is saying that the Lord is my strength, meaning the Lord is the one who is going to give me the strength I need to walk through this. And the problem for us is that we don't think that way a lot of times. We think that all I have to do is for me to think my way through this. He says, the Lord is my song, meaning that it's the words of the Lord, it's communicating the truth of the Lord that is going to help him walk him through this. And it's like you read any kind of like psychological help on anxiety, a lot of times the mantra is going to be about you. It's going to be that you are strong, you are powerful, you are worthy, you can walk through this. Which that's the very opposite of what David does here. David actually remembers the promises of God, and he's going to do that with his voice. And that the Lord is his salvation, meaning that God is what's going to deliver him out of this. Right? That's a hard place to come to sometimes. David says elsewhere in Psalm 27:1, he says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread? And so David admits that some fears are real. We're going to have some fears in our lives that are real and that deserve our attention. And then there are going to be some that we exaggerate to some degree. There's going to be some that we literally placate in our mind the 47 things that could happen from this situation. The 47 things that could go wrong if it plays out like this. And if you struggle with anxiety, that's what an anxious mind does. It thinks about all the ways things could go wrong, could possibly be destroyed, could possibly go horrific for those around me, all the ways that it could go bad. But for David, the solution is the same, that God's promises are real, that his promises are real. David is oftentimes seen as sort of the antithesis of the king who came before him, King Saul. So Saul is described as this sort of big kind of giant warrior king. David is described as this kind of small, runty kid. David is sort of, he's a really big guy. He's a guy who was important, guy of the right tribe. David is the youngest son, which was in those days kind of in terms of social status, you're the bottom rung, right? He's a shepherd. Saul was a guy who takes charge. David was a guy who's seen as someone who waited on the Lord. In fact, this becomes really, really evident when Saul actually realizes that David is going to be king. And so Saul, out of this fear, desires to take control in whatever way he can. He pursues David, I mean, literally to the ends of the kingdom, trying to kill him because he's filled with fear, he's filled with anxiety. And so that the outcome of that was that he wanted to control. And David is described as the exact opposite. David is given plenty of opportunities to actually kill Saul, and he doesn't. Because in his mind, he says, this is not what the Lord wants. I'm going to wait on the Lord. And this becomes the straw that breaks the camel's back is a battle in Gilgal. It's in 1 Samuel 13, where Saul is supposed to wait on Samuel to come and perform a sacrifice before this great battle. Battle starts, though, and it's not going well. And Saul sees that it's not going well. And so instead of continuing to trust in the Lord and wait on Samuel to arrive, he actually makes the sacrifice himself. It's a big, big no-no. Samuel arrives, and literally that's the end of Saul's kingdom. He says, it's over. You're done. And so for us, like, fear is also a reflection of what makes us feel in control. And that's the second point in your outline there. Fear is also a reflection of what makes us feel in control. Because fear isn't just about danger, right? It's also about worry. It's about worrying about the things that could happen, or worrying about the things that might not happen, or worry about the things that if they happen, what's going to be the outcome of that? And fear oftentimes reveals the things that we want to have control over. I heard it wrote like this, and I thought it was actually really, really good. Someone said that fear is a thunderstorm, and anxiety is a cold drizzle that is miserable and produces mold that will destroy everything we've built. I thought that was good, and we as hurricane people, we can relate to that, right? That there's a lot of fear when it comes to a hurricane. When there's a hurricane in the Gulf, like everyone knows it, right? It's like water bottle, milk, gone instantly. A lot of fear that comes along with a hurricane. And then there's this anxiety, like when the waters start to rise, right? Or roof leaks, man. Roof leaks are the worst thing ever because they play, you know, had a roof leak? The worst thing about that is like you feel like you have no control, right? There's no control of the situation. And if I don't control the situation, mold's going to start growing. And I'm going to have to burn this house down, right? It's the only outcome. And so oftentimes fear becomes this reflection of what we want most control over. There are times where we feel completely helpless and we hate that feeling. And we hate that feeling even despite knowing that God is in control. But we hate that feeling because we know that we are not in control. And that bothers us. And there's a quote in your outline that says this. And this is from Dostoevsky. He writes the Crime and Punishment and Brothers Karamazov's really good books. He says, above all, avoid lies, all lies, especially the lie to yourself. And avoid fear, although fear is simply the consequence of every lie. And that's really, really true. Because the truth is that we're not really in control of a lot of things. If we're really honest with the amount of things we're in control of, it would be a very small number. And yet, when we feel like we are out of control, we are filled with worry. We're filled with anxiety. It moves us to this place where we're filled with fear. And that requires us to be honest. Like, in order to fix that, honesty is really required. We have to be honest about the things that we so desperately want control over. And we have to be honest about why we want control over those things. And we have to be honest that, like, we haven't actually given God total control of those things that we want control over or feel like what we deserve to have control over. And look, and being honest with yourself and identifying bad ways of thinking is actually the way that like clinical professionals help people who have anxiety get over anxiety. And the way you actually get over anxiety has nothing to do with like envisioning some better future for yourself, right? The way you move past anxiety has nothing to do with thinking, forgetting the situation that you're in and envisioning some better future. It's actually not the way you deal with anxiety. It's not the way professionals do it. It's actually the way that you remove anxiety from your life or at least begin to deal with it is to be honest with yourself. To be honest with how you've approached things. To be honest with how you are thinking about things and then identifying thought patterns that don't make sense. And identifying thought patterns that aren't really representative of who you are, that aren't really rooted in truth. And then working that out. Look, for you and I as believers in here, this is exactly what we are called to do as well. To understand how our thoughts tend to deceive us, because that's what they do. That our minds are really, really good at producing falsehoods, producing things that are not true. That in light of God and in light of our relationship with Him, do my thoughts accurately reflect who God is? Do my thoughts in this situation actually reflect my state in this situation? Are my fears and my anxiety, is it warranted? And even if it is warranted, am I still thinking true about God and who He is? And what He is capable of. Because we would like to believe, and this is where I think we kind of get things backwards. We would like to believe that if we're walking with God, then the things that actually produce fear in us would just be taken away. That when we're actually walking well with God, we don't have any reason to fear, or that we won't actually feel any fear at all or any anxiety at all. That if we're walking with Him well, that everything that might produce fear is just, God just takes it. But that really isn't true. And here's your next point. Obedience to God doesn't alleviate fears. It instead, though, draws us close to Him as we walk through it. Psalms 46:1-3 says this. God is our shelter and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not be afraid, even if the earth is shaken and the mountains fall into the depths of the ocean. Even if the seas roar and rage and the hills are shaken by violence. So unfortunately, as we read that, here's what we don't see. We don't see the mountains not falling into the sea. We don't see the earth not being shaken. We don't see the seas not roaring and raging. We don't see the hills not being shaken by violence. And these are really poetic pictures of kind of life events. He's not talking about these things happening for real. He's talking about this being a reflection of what is happening around him, what he feels about the things that he's seeing. And unfortunately, we don't see God just simply removing those things. We see God being described, or the Lord being described, as a shelter and strength. And it would be really nice if God would simply just remove the things that caused fear in us. Remove the things that spark anxiety in us. But the problem is that we wouldn't learn much about God if he did that. We wouldn't learn much about life if that took place. It's kind of like, I think the perfect illustration of this is with our children, right? So when our kids are afraid of something, typically the response is for us to do it with them first, right? And so anytime my girls are afraid of jumping off something high into the pool, usually what I do is I pick them up, they're kicking and screaming, and I just throw them off. Or I jump off with them. And of course, they're crying all the way up there, and then all of a sudden when they realize what just happened, they're like, oh, that was great. Let's do that again. It's like, yeah, okay. I remember the first time that I was afraid, I was probably like 6 or 7, and I was terrified of roller coasters, didn't want to ride roller coasters. And so I remember my dad picked me up and took me into the line, and we're standing in this line, and he literally just has me to stand. I know what's happening. I'm screaming, and he's got me in this line, and we literally stand in this line until we go to the front, and we're the last ones in. He sits us down. He looks at the guy who's like running the controls. He's like, go. Let's go. Let's get it. And I'm screaming and crying, and we rode the roller coaster, and man, I loved it. I love roller coasters now. And then there's kind of more hard ones where your kids have to get shots, right? And you're in there, and you're like holding them down, and they're looking at you, and they're like, what are you doing to me? You have betrayed me, right? But you know that this is necessary, and it's for their good. And that's where trust and faith come in. That with our hopes and fears, we're trusting in God that as we walk through difficult things, and as we experience things, as we reflect on the things that make us anxious, we remember that actually God is walking through this with us. And sometimes through that, he's revealing to us that some of the things that we're afraid of, like, they don't really deserve our fears. They don't really deserve our anxiety. Like, as we walk through them, he kind of shows us that this isn't worth being afraid of. And then there are times where what we're walking through is actually really, really painful. And it's really, really hurting. And we're struggling to understand why this is taking place. And we're struggling to understand that this thing that's causing us fear, causing us anxiety, like, why can't we just move past it? And why can't God just take it? And then we point to the fact that God actually knows what our good is. And part of our hope and trust in him is understanding, okay, this God knows what my good is, and this thing that seems bad and seems scary, that it's going to end up producing good in me, even though we may not feel like that can be the case. But God oftentimes doesn't remove our fears, but he promises to walk through them with us, that he will be a shelter in those times for us. And so we see David trust in the promises of God. Overall, David trusts in the promises of God while revealing his thoughts about it. David's really honest. Sometimes he's like, this is terrible. Why is this happening to me? Why have you abandoned me? But yet he believes the promises of God. And David saw the works of God. But for you and I, there's a significant change that happens. Like, David never really saw the fullest fulfillment of God's promises. Like, you and I have actually had the chance to see that. And not see it in person, but at least have a knowledge of it and see what took place and see how God actually gives us sort of the ultimate solution for our struggles and our fears. And this is what John talks about in 1 John 4:13. He says, "By this we know that we abide in him and he in us," him being Jesus, "because he has given us his Spirit. And we have seen and testify that the Father has sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. Whoever confesses that Jesus is the Son of God, God abides in him and he in God. And we have come to know that we have believed the love which God has for us, because God is love. And the one who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. And by this, love is perfected with us, so that we may have confidence in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. And there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves punishment. And the one who fears is not perfected in love." And so he says that if we know Jesus and abide in him, abiding in him means walking in his love. And what is the outcome of walking in his love? It says that we experience this sort of supernatural confidence. Confidence that God is with us and confidence that God is walking with us. And actually, there's an incredible statement in there that says, "Because as he is, so are we in the world." What's a wild statement that is? That's a crazy statement. Because as Jesus is, so are we in this world. And how was Jesus in this world? Okay, well, first, he was loved by the Father. He was loved by God. He was guided by God. Guided by God to walk through some pretty supernatural, incredible, scary, fearful, anxious times. The Gospels are documented, filled with times which, if the situations were reversed, I mean, we would not make it. Jesus was in the world accomplishing the will of the Father that no evil could possibly overcome, because there is no love and fear. See, and this is the point. The opposite of fear is love, because love is about others. And fear really is more of a reflection of ourselves, which is why in Timothy it says that God has not given us the spirit of fear, but he's given us the spirit of power. Not the power to be God, or not the power to be like God, but the power to walk through whatever God has put in front of us to walk through. Okay, and this is a difficult thing, because fear is real. There are real reasons to feel anxious about life. There are real reasons to feel anxious about where you are and the things that you're having to walk through and the things you're having to deal with. In fact, everyone in this room is going to experience times in their lives where they don't know what the future holds. And that's a really tough place to be, because we have no control. And we sense in our emotions what that feels like to really have no control. It stirs in us this fear. But I'm going to give you just a last encouragement from David in Psalms 27. It says, "I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord." And I love that, because he said that I would have despaired unless I believed that I would see the goodness of God. And many times with our hopes, with our fears and our anxiety, the issue that we face is that we don't really think we're going to see the goodness of God. We don't really think that the goodness of God is possible. We don't really think, we actually believe the goodness of God has actually left us in most cases. That when we're in this place, we're wondering, where is the goodness of God? But David says that he would have despaired also had he not believed that he would see the goodness of God in the land of the living. Meaning that in my days, I'm going to see the goodness of God. And so he says to be strong. Take heart, take courage. And so we're going to sing a song here in just a second. And I think that one of the best benefits about singing a song is communicating things that your heart struggles to really believe. There are many times when we're worshiping that there's a line on there that as I sing it, I'm like, I don't know if I really can say that that's accurate of me. Lots of times. But part of me singing that is the hopeful, sort of the hopeful voice of someone that God will bring that to pass at some point. That in me, God's gonna do something where that becomes true. And so that's also true about things that we're afraid of, things that we're filled with fear, things that bring us anxiety, things that keep us awake at night. The power of song is this: we get to communicate to God that, God, I'm hopeful that one day the things that I'm seeing are true and I feel them in my heart. And they resolve my fear and they resolve my anxiety. And maybe not today, maybe not next week, but at some point, I'm going to continue to look at the goodness of God, continue to hope in his promises. So I'm going to pray, and then while we're singing that song, we're going to do something different. We're going to have people over here who are going to be ready to pray with you if you so need it. I'll be standing over there. And so I want to invite you that if you're at a place where you're at a place of fear, you're at a place of anxiety, and you need someone to just talk to and pray with you, maybe it's about your kids, maybe your kids are in a situation that you feel like is out of your control and you don't know what to do. I don't know, maybe life is hard, work stuff is hard. We're going to be over there and would invite you to, during the song, come pray with us. Be happy to. So let's pray together. Well, I'm thankful for your promises, God, that in the midst of life that easily produces fear, easily produces anxiety, easily produces a sense of not having control, not knowing what the future holds, knowing that lots of things could go wrong, Lord, it's easy to come to a place where we forget who you are and we forget what you've done for us. We forget that, God, that you have overcome the world that we live in, the world that seems scary, the world that fills us with anxiousness. Lord, many times, sometimes we're afraid of things that don't make sense. We're filled with anxiety about things that we know aren't rational and aren't true. But Lord, you've overcome those things too. And so Father, during this time, I pray, Lord, that as we sing and as we reflect on our hearts and lives, Lord, that we would come to a place where we would remember your promises and trust, God, that at some point we're going to see your goodness. And so Father, as we sing, maybe we're not singing about things that are true right now, God, but we're singing about things that we hope to someday be. So help us to be there. In Jesus' name.